In the coming years, it's likely that right now what we're doing is we're looking at 2005 loans in too early of the process to where, in other words, we're going to go down in price maybe for 3 or 4 years or so. I'm not so excited about getting those to hang on to right now. If I'm going to buy subject two from somebody, it's probably going to be 4 years from now, where the loan that has no equity was taken out in 2003, and it's now 2009. That's the one I'm interested in, because by then we're about ready to go the other direction, and they've paid off a bunch more principal, and I can just take it over subject to and then retain ownership, having a trustee, and I'll just go long instead of worrying about transferring out of the property. So that would be of an interest to me. If you're going to be selling it subject to right away, when you're selling it, the property already has financing in place, so we don't need to borrow money and pay points for purchase. We don't have to have the buyer that we're going to find have to qualify for anything. So the purchase can happen very quickly. Rosamond, I am still waiting to close 10 escrows. They've been in escrow for probably 90 days. You know, I don't want to kick out the buyers because buyers are getting harder to find. So, you know, we give them a weekly hug and say, hang in there, whatever you need, you know. But if you have a transaction where they don't need to qualify for anything, all they have to do is put up money, you can get that done much quicker. So it also entails no broker. So when you're setting up subject to deals, you want to put yourself in a position where there won't be a broker necessary to sell your properties. The finance is in place. There should be a low enough down payment where somebody that has difficulty qualifying for a loan but has money doesn't have a lot of other choices. Your inventory is one of the few properties that they can buy. Top of page 64. In a sale escrow, when you're dealing with somebody buying subject to, there's no approval process other than money. So if they have enough money to take you out of your position, they qualify. Because they're not going to be assuming the loan anyway. Their qualification is the fact that they have enough money to make the transaction happen, and it's actually the biggest security you have for the transaction is to have them more into the deal with more cash. It's a lot easier to walk away from $5,000 than it is $50,000. If someone gives you a pretty good size down payment, the likelihood of them walking away is slim. Also, if we have low interest loans in place, and as the market changes to where interest rates increase, we'll be able to take back all-inclusive trust deeds, build in an interest spread to where if we can't sell it for a whole lot more, maybe we can create cash flow and the transaction would make sense. Subject two, in this next cycle, really demands that you buy very clean properties that are going to be in demand that you can sell. You don't want to get into where you have some marginal inventory subject to. You just will not get the down payment and maybe not the speed of sale. So just be careful. During every break this time, which is different than even a month ago, I have been told of, we have 7 houses for sale. We don't even have anybody showing up. That's a scary place. I've been there. My Palm Springs was like that. No one showed. I'd sat there for day after day after day. No one showed. We missed the market by a few months, and all of a sudden it just dried up and blew away. So when you're in that particular situation, it's tough. You don't want to put yourself on purpose there by buying something subject to, putting yourself on the line basically to make that person's payment and then not have anywhere to go with the inventory. So don't do that. Another thing is, don't ignore properties that aren't in foreclosure. And I'm in the middle of page 64. You'll find that if you run ads during this time frame, or you do absentee owner mailers, a very common comment will be, I just want you to take over my loan. And when you get past the assumption part, and they really just want you to take over their payment, they're not behind at all. So now you've got nothing down to a great interest loan, and you don't have to assume it. They just want off of it because they're not able to sell it. Usually they're not able to sell it because they're trying to sell it like everyone else. Their buyer has to get new financing, or their buyer has to assume the loan, and so now they just become one of many properties for sale. All of a sudden, if you take over that ownership and you change it to where you can buy my property and you don't have to qualify for financing, You don't have to get a new loan. You don't have to qualify for an assumption. Can you see that you've broadened your horizon to buyers that don't have a chance at any other house, and therefore it's easier to sell? Here's the downside of buying subject to. The original borrower's name stays on the loan until the loan's paid off. Many people don't understand the concept, and so they'll think you're trying to pull a fast one. And even if they understand it the day you do it, they can have amnesia down the road somewhere, and sometimes they're helped along by well-meaning relatives, accountants, attorneys, or whoever, that find the transaction not to their liking 90 days in arrears. You know, and that's why we're going to show you some disclosures that are very important for you to have them sign. There are risks to the seller. They're not going to go away for a while, and they have to understand that. And unless you make the risk plain and in writing, you can expect a call from the seller should anything go wrong. Even if you make it plain in writing, you'll probably get a phone call, just so you know. All right, they tend to have amnesia and can get, again, help with relatives and that. Every once in a while, you get a real stinker. And this is on the bottom of page 64. The seller could call the lender on the property and inform them of the transfer. Now, this is called, please let me shoot myself in my foot. So now the lender maybe does a foreclosure on a transaction they wouldn't even know existed, because this seller is trying to force you to do something that you didn't agree to do in the first place. So I'm just telling you that when you buy subject to, you enter into a little bit of a weird place where not too many people understand it, and there's a lot of misconceptions about it being illegal, and it's frustrating. So just be aware that all that can occur. Page 65, formula for buying subject to. And I just wanted to go over an example to where you decide where this makes sense for you not to buy it. The formula is a profitable purchase. If you have a $300,000 house and you owe $285 on it and it's current, and you want to deed that property to me, that's 5% off. That sounds like a dumb deal, unless I have a guy over here that wants the house and will pay $15,000 down to get it. Is that a stupid transaction? $15,000, I go, everybody's explained the risk, is that okay? So a good transaction is one that makes a profit, that everyone understands what they're doing, and you leave the party with a profit and no risk. What I don't want you doing is doing the transactions where, oh, you said this was going to not happen, and it did, and if people didn't make payments, and now you're in the trouble. You don't want that problem. So let's just go through a scenario on top of page 65. Property is in near perfect condition. The value is $500,000. The loan balance is $450,000 at 6%. It's a fixed loan. The loan has 28 years remaining on a 30-year loan. The seller's $10,000 behind in payments, okay? So the loan balance $450,000 plus 10. He's into the loan really for $460,000. I use this from the other course just to show closing cost on a listed property that needed a new loan. So ignore the fact that it shows a $250,000 loan. All I'm doing is wanting to go down to the bottom and show the closing cost. When we get down to the bottom, it says total cost $45,000. Yeah, don't worry about that. I'm not talking. What I'm doing is showing you only a seller's net. Andrea Jennings gave us net sheets. You remember in the last course, she went from $750,000 all the way down to $300,000. This is just one of those. It doesn't matter that it has a $250,000 loan on it. What matters is that you look at the total cost of a $500,000 sale transaction, and it's $45,000. Do you see that on the bottom? Okay, because typically the buyer is going to get a new transaction, a new loan. They're going to have realtors involved. So that's where that $45,000 come from. If you add what they owe, $450,000 plus 10 plus 45, are they going to net anything selling this house with a normal transaction with a realtor? No. That's the only purpose for that page. So the seller will net zero doing a transaction with a broker on this property. Okay, turn to page 66. So the question you have to ask yourself is, can you sell this house for $500,000 requiring a 10% down payment with zero qualifying? If the house is good enough that it'll sell for that, then you've netted probably in excess of $30,000 for placing yourself in the middle of a seller who will normally net zero and a renter who normally can't buy. That's the essence of doing the subject to business. It's very likely that this house will end up being an REO, because if the seller's not going to net anything when they list it, they're bound to do a short sale or just walk. So a subject to deal is actually saving the lender from taking back another property. I hope they get smart and let us do that without calling the loans in the future, because it would be a big help. So now, would you pay $460 for this house? Well, you already are, because he owes $450 plus $10. Would you pay $470? You've got to figure out how easy you're going to be able to sell this house. And what ends up happening if you start doing this and you start running ads about buying or selling properties with no qualifying is you will end up with a buyer's list that want the property. Maybe this one's not in the location, or maybe they came second. There was another person that came in first. The no qualifying part will allow this house to sell in a tough market if it's got everything else going for it. But selling properties is going to be tough in the next few years. We make it easier if we have a scenario where they don't have to qualify for the financing. Okay? That'll be an advantage. Top of page 67, whenever you're dealing with someone in foreclosure and you want to talk to the lender about their loan, you need an authorization to release information form signed by them. And it says, we authorize you to release to the Norris Group any and all information that they may require regarding our loan number, blah, blah, blah. You may reproduce this document to acquire information from more than one source. Signed by the owner was the Social Security number. Now, that may lead you to the person that asks the questions, and you may find that you need more information from the seller. Every lender is different. If you turn the page to page 68, you'll see a seller acknowledgement page. If I'm buying subject to and the seller refuses to sign this, we're done. I'm not interested. This is the seller. I have been made aware that my loan on the property located at whatever it is contains a due on sale clause. This means that the lender has the right to call the entire loan balance due and payable if the property is transferred to a new owner. I understand that the buyer in this transaction will not be assuming my loan and that the loan will remain in my name. I further understand that the buyer intends to resell the property and the loan will most likely still remain in my name. I agree to hold harmless this buyer, any future buyer, in the event payments are not made and the lender forecloses on the property for any reason, including enforcement of the due on sale clause. Then I'm going to have them initial. I am satisfied that given my current situation, this agreement is in my best interest. I have signed this agreement being fully informed and with sufficient understanding of all terms and conditions contained in this agreement. I understand I am selling a property to an investor who's intending to resell the property for a profit. I have agreed to sell because my circumstances dictate the immediate closing is needed and the sale is in my best interest. I agree that I am signing this agreement of my own free will and that the buyer has in no way pressured me into signing the agreement. Does that sound good? You'll never get a better chance to have them sign that than when you haven't provided the service. If you make the loan current and then try to get this signed later, forget it. A service once rendered is rendered worthless. That's a very good phrase to remember. So you don't do anything you're supposed to do until you have that signed. Now your buyer, page 69. I have been made aware that the loan and the property located at contains a due on sale clause. This means that the lender has a right to call the entire loan balance due and payable. Sound familiar? So we basically warn them that the lender can call the loan due. And in the third paragraph, should the lender become aware of the transfer, I have been informed of some actions I can take to prevent the lender from taking the property. I agree to rigorously pursue one of the following options in order to solve the problem. I will either qualify for an assumption of the existing loan, refinance the property, pay off the old loan, or sell the property. I agree to hold harmless the seller if the lender forecloses on the property for any reason, including enforcement of the due on sale clause. I should read that second paragraph. I understand that if the lender becomes aware that the transfer has occurred, the lender can commence foreclosure on the property. I am aware that if the lender forecloses, I will no longer own the property. I will have lost my down payment and any other money spent on the property and damage the credit of the original owner or borrower. Now, you think, well, who would sign this thing? Somebody that cannot buy a property any other way, but not, you know, they can't qualify for the normal financing, and so they're not owners of a property. So your buyer's motivated enough on the day he wants to buy this property to sign this, and the seller is motivated enough to sign theirs. And if both of them don't want to sign it, then you are not in. Don't go into escrow with a buyer that doesn't sign something like this, because it'll cause you a problem. And if you don't disclose it and it happens, you may have to enter back in and solve it. This is my best shot at saying you understand why you're selling it and that this could happen to you. You understand that you're buying it, this could happen to you. I made a profit in the middle. Everybody have a good life. See you later. I want that in these transactions. I don't want to hang on over here and over here and be the middleman for the next decade unless there's a reason. And the only reason would be is if I wrapped the financing and became the lender. And then I have a vested interest. Page number 70, this is the letter to the insurance company. The property which you insure, located at whatever, as Riverside, has been transferred to an inter vivos trust. This trust name is dated, the trustee's name, and then please name the trustee of this trust as additionally insured. So that's if we were going to retain title to a property, that would be a good way to do it. As far as insurance, that's one of the ways the lenders do find out that there's a problem. Typical objections to taking over subject to, page 71, I won't be able to buy another house. You've got your name still tied up in financing on your first house. They think there's no way another lender in the world exists that will loan them money, perhaps in another state, on a new home that they're going to buy. They're correct that not all lenders will. They're wrong that there's not some lenders that will. So going through a loan broker, they will find that there will be lenders that will make that loan. They have to prove that the transfer, they transferred this property out of their name, and there'll be lenders that will fund them on their new home, just as if this loan didn't exist. But you have to find that lender. Second objection, you might not make the payments and that'll hurt my credit. Well, aside from the fact that they've already done that themselves, because that's why we're talking to them, I never have seen that as a very valid point if I'm going to give them money. And so I've always been able to get them to reason that if in fact you're netting a certain amount of money, and if nothing else, I'm making the loan current, right? So I'm taking $10,000 or $15,000 out of my pocket and making a loan current that's not even mine. If you could give me a justifiable reason why I wouldn't make the next payment and then put myself in jeopardy, I'd like to hear it. It's just not a reasonable thought. So I'm going to put this money out to bring it current, and while I am ownership, while I have ownership of this property, they are going to be made current. And if they're worried about it, you can do a couple things. You can give them a wrap on the property, or you could make some payments in advance. But I would say most of the time you just need to get decent at explaining that you've done a lot of transactions where you're putting up money and you've never even thought of not making the payment because you've just come out of pocket with money to bring it current. So I really wouldn't understand why I would be a businessman that would do that. Bottom of page 71, the bank will foreclose and ruin my credit. That could be a valid point. The lender does have the right to do that. Everything that we try to do to mask that still could be the end result. The lender could foreclose. So their circumstance usually will dictate that they would rather get off of the payment and take that risk. That's the seller who we're talking to. The truth is there's very few lenders that actually do foreclose on the property because they do on sale. So interest rates being low 3 years from now, lower than the market, I don't think will mean a thing because the lenders will have so many properties that they take back. I can't imagine them wanting to take back another property. On top of page 72 is the concept of an all-inclusive deed of trust. So you can use this to protect the seller. You can do this to increase cash flow for yourself. What it does, basically, it gives the seller, if they're going to be the one carrying the paper, a chain in the title of the financing to where if, let's say I sell the property to someone and ultimately they don't make the payments, the original seller is a lender in the process, and he actually can make the payments current on the first and foreclose on his all-inclusive trust deed. So he can protect his own destiny, and a lot of times that would make them feel better. So the paperwork for that is on page 73 and following. Now, I would use this if I wanted to change the interest rate to, let's say, the going rate, forward to about 2 years from now, where interest rates might be 8 or 9%, and I get a chance to take over a loan. And we'll use this exact example so we don't have to go past that. Remember, we had this $500,000 house we were talking about. It had a $450,000 current balance, and it was 2 years old. So let's take a look at that. This is the paperwork, and on page 73, you'll see, for the purpose of securing payment, under A, do you see that in the lower third of this document? The indebtedness evidence by a promissory note of the same date in the sum of $450,000. No? Okay. Just look at the page 73. But on 76, I'll be able to explain the all-inclusive deed concept. 76 and 77 will show. Okay, in the agreement part, and I basically show on top of that, let's start at the top of the page. This is an addendum to the trust deed dated May 27th, 06, between your buyer, Chicago Title Company, you the seller, or any entity in which you have an interest. So I just put that there so you could fill in the blanks. This trust deed is subordinate to the following trust deeds and notes referred to as the underlying obligations. What that line is saying is that this all-inclusive trust deed isn't in first position. It is subordinated to what we're about to mention right now. And so what I'm about to mention is the original loan that's in place. A trust deed recorded on May 27th, 2004. I went back, remember I said this is a two-year-old loan? So I went back 2 years and I calculated what the original loan balance was to end up with a 450 balance today, okay? So that's why you have where it says securing a note in the original amount of $461,689. That was the original amount, with an unpaid balance of $450, with installments of $2,768.06, including 6% annual interest. So that's what was originally borrowed by the person I bought the property from. Now I'm selling this property, and I'm going to carry an all-inclusive deed of trust. And if you take a look at page 77, you'll see why I did that. The underlying financing, I still owe $450. When you look at the all-inclusive deed of trust, it's for $450,000 as well. But what's changed? When you go down, interest rate is 8%. Principal and interest payments and installments of $3,301.94. And I'm only paying $2,768. Is that a positive cash flow that just came out of literally nowhere? I'm just adding some financing. So I'm making 2% on $450,000. Isn't that $9,000 a year? That's nothing to sneeze at. What if it went for the whole 28 years? Is that okay? That's not a bad check to pick up every year for a long time. Principal is due and payable. The principal amount of this note includes the present unpaid balance of $450 on a note secured by an existing deed of trust held by the original lender, and you would type that in, the original lender, and in the original amount of $461,689. So basically, when you do an all-inclusive deed of trust, it allows you to literally create a loan around a loan. Whatever you have existing, if that financing is too cheap for the current going market, you can bump it up by wrapping it inside of this deed of trust. Change the terms, lengthen it. What would happen again if this was a 15-year loan that was in place and you only had 9 years left to pay off and you got to carry 30-year financing for 8%? in 21 years, there wouldn't be an underlying. It would just be you. So that $3,000 a month that you would get, you wouldn't have any place else to send any of it. That's why this is going to be a nice niche in the future, is that we'll be able to wrap some very low interest rates, 40-year low interest rates, and I have a feeling the lender is going to let us do it because they will not want it back. So that's a pretty unique situation. And I think the court, there's something about the length of time, and there's not a specific time frame, but if the lender allows you to make payments for long enough, they've pretty much accepted the fact that you are not going to have to assume the loan, and that they have almost lost their right to foreclose. There is some case law regarding that, that the longer it goes, the better off you are. And there's no law that says if it goes, 12 months, it's over. But the longer it goes, the better off that you are.